Welcome to the Libertas Media Project. Here's your host, Brian Wilson.
All right, the Libertas Media Project rolls on. Here we have another opportunity to rub brains with prolific author and Washington, D.C.'s official gadfly, author of Lost Rights, Freedom and Change, The Bush Betrayal, Attention Deficit Democracy, and a shelf full of other great reads. His latest, Public Policy Hooligan, a very short story about a Virginia highway maintenance worker who made it big shoveling dirt in Washington, D.C. Ladies and gentlemen, James Bovard.
Thanks, Brian. That's the first time I'd heard that. Heard someone tie the highway department gig to shoveling stuff in D.C. But at least I learned how not to shovel work for the government.
Well, there is that. You know, I was kind of curious. What nefarious activities did you have for putting butt on the butter prior to landing that posh job with the VDOT?
Well, the main gig I had was working two summers in a peach orchard when I was 15 and 16.
Mm.
And doing that 10 hours a day, 5 days a week. And some of the characters I worked with were memorable. There was a guy named Albert who was kind of had a little trouble with the bottle, but he was kind of gnarly in mid-30s. And the thing about him was his conversation consisted of two sentences: "That really burns my ass," and "No shit."
Well, there's nothing wrong with being succinct.
Well, he was certainly succinct. Every now and then at lunch hour, there were me and a couple other teenagers working there, and he would give us, no one asked him for advice, but he would give a lot of advice as far as how to please. Well, no, let's roll the curtain to mercy.
All right, okay. All right, let's move along. Well, you know, it's interesting you bring about his fondness for the bottle. I don't know too many people know that the latest honor at the Flying Dog Brewery in Frederick, Maryland, where they make this Raging Bitch, a brew of Belgian funk that Mr. Bovard has got wrapped around, is his preferred libation. Last month, they hung up your picture instead of the 2015 Playboy calendar. I think that everybody ought to know that. That's pretty good.
I guess that's why your stock price lost 8% last week.
Well, there was that. Yeah, I didn't want to mention that, but moving right along. You know, as you know from our off-air conversations, I've been...
Oh, shit.
No.
Off the record, I swear to God.
I've been spending a little of my newfound time revisiting some of your previous scribblings that I've enjoyed, and quite frankly, gaining a whole new appreciation for the depths of your observations, especially in as much as they tie in pretty well with the research I'm doing on some of my own philosophical positions. I picked up my copy of your book, Attention Deficit Democracy. And right here at the beginning, you say modern democracy is based on faith that people can control what they do not understand. As government has grown by leaps and bounds, government by the people, quote unquote, has become one of the great fairy tales of our times. As the founding fathers feared, citizen ignorance often brings out the worst in their rulers. So is that it? Is that the answer to the big question, where are we going and why are we in this handbasket? It's all attributable, or the vast majority of it, to citizen ignorance, right?
Well, the thing which I... There's a lot of folks who have poked at citizens' ignorance, and it's absolutely a fair topic, but what strikes me, and it strikes me more with each passing year, is how the congressmen themselves are very often ignorant of what they're doing, often proudly so. And as long as they get campaign contributions and get reelected, they don't need to read. This has become more fashionable and openly so among prominent politicians. My favorite comment from the 2012 presidential campaign cycle was when Herman Cain was a front runner, and he was starting to get a lot of questions from the media, and he wasn't answering them very well. And Cain just says, "What America leads." Cain said that what America needs is a leader, not a reader. this pretty well summarized the attitude of Washington politicians. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, it's lots of folks live that way. I'm just surprised to see someone boasting about it. So,
well, on that note, and indeed, we have talked about citizen ignorance. As a matter of fact, I was doing having some conversation with Judge Andrew Napolitano about a recent U.S. Supreme Court decision, Heinen, I believe is the proper pronunciation, v. North Carolina, which essentially put the end to the old maxim that ignorance of the law is no excuse, unless apparently you're a policeman. That if the policeman pulls you over and does an illegal search and finds some nefarious subject, you can't get it tossed because he pulled you over for no reason, according to law, which is exactly what happened to this person in North Carolina. Supposedly one of his brake lights were out, so the cop pulls him over, but driving around with one brake light in North Carolina is okay. So the question came up, of course, well, shouldn't the policeman know the law? And by virtue of the fact that he applied it incorrectly, that obviates the case. No. Apparently, as long as the officer had good intentions, that makes it all very admissible. So I suspect that with respect to Mr. Kane and other politicians that have fallen into your crosshairs on that, apparently they've opted to the Supreme Court decision even before it was made, that ignorance is no excuse for the law or policy or anything else.
Well, they've certainly, the system certainly has gone easy on its own ignorance, and that was a fairly appalling Supreme Court decision because it weakens one more leash on the police, and there are darn few of those left. But it's the fact that the Justice Department would be all in favor of that decision because, and you know, you've got a huge police political establishment now, and they're always pressuring the courts to whittle away the thin reeds of our rights and liberties that still remain. So, but a systemic thing here is that almost no one wants to sit down and add up or cipher together all the different rights and liberties that people have lost from decisions like this. There was a decision back in the 1980s on the open fields doctrine, which basically meant that the cops could go and search people's land even though they didn't have a property, as long as there wasn't a 30-foot barbed wire fence surrounding it. So,
yeah, I want to get into that a little bit with you based on that book review you wrote recently, and we'll get to that before we go. But circling back for a moment to the ignorance of politicians and all the rest, and the ignorance of citizens that have encouraged them to do what they do, isn't it likely, considering the magnetic attraction that power has for sociopaths and narcissists and megalomaniacs, that they would most likely have become politicians and rulers in any government format anyway?
Well, I'm trying to stick to euphemisms here, and it's a struggle.
don't bother.
Power has always been a magnet for sociopaths, psychopaths, call them what you want, folks who just lust to have power over other people. And so it's like an incredibly negative selection process to start with. Every now and then there's a politician who acts on principle and dedicates himself to rolling back government power and making it easier for people to have freedom in their own lives again. But those politicians are few and far between, and they usually get smeared by the media.
Well, on that line, taking that a little bit further, I don't want to get too far ahead of jumping around here because there are other questions. I want to go over to Chapter 6 in your book, Freedom in Chains. And again, in the interest of full disclosure, Jim and I have been discussing some of the finer points of this off the air, and we'll get into that a little bit for subsequent conversations we're going to have. But I was in a correspondence with a gentleman recently, and the following exchange took place. He cited a quote by Frank Herbert, the guy who wrote Dune, and I suspect the screenplay and several other things for that. The quote that he sent me was that all governments suffer a recurring problem. Power attracts pathological personalities. It's not that power corrupts, but that it is magnetic to the corruptible. I wrote back and suggested that at best this is a distinction without a difference. Government power doesn't self-generate. It's manifested through immoral force that's harnessed by the liars, thieves, and sociopaths that inhabit government. That's where the guns are. Government is inherently corrupt as a result, and that's where the magnetism for the corrupt, not just the corruptible. I mean, sane people, you would think, would be rejecting things like elections and the political process, and instead working to dispel any form of government, if not for their own safety, but for their own welfare. That's my thought. And with respect to the comments you wrote at the beginning of sovereignty and political slavery in Chapter 6 of Lost Rights, my question with regards to that, specifically in relationship to that chapter was the concept of political sovereignty. Where did that come from? Where did that originate? Was that Leviticus, Divine Right of Kings, Mad Magazine? I mean, where did that concept come from, since it's so debilitating with regards to the principles of freedom and liberty?
Well, this is something which really was not really obvious notion prior to the 1500s, 1600s. And at that point, there were a number of European writers who basically sought to create a doctrine that would give kings unlimited power. A French guy by the name of Jean Bodin, if that's how it's pronounced, Bodin, was a big advocate of sovereignty. And he was also a very big advocate of burning people accused of witches, of witchcraft, even if they weren't guilty.
So they pretty much let him go along with anything he wanted.
Well, yeah, I mean, it saves a lot of paperwork that way.
Yeah.
But there was, and Hobbes later on was pushing the same doctrine. Robert Filmer, another British writer, talked about how it was vital for the king to have absolute power. And many people in the 1600s, especially in England, recognized that these were novel and dangerous doctrines, because in the English common law as it had developed, there was a much more of a clear notion that the king did not have a right to unlimited power simply because he was king. Simply because he had that title did not mean that he could destroy everything he saw. And this is a similar difficulty that some Americans are having in the last decade or so regarding the powers of the presidency.
Yeah. Well, who was it that said, that was Richard Nixon, of course, who said, as long as the president does it, it's not illegal, or words to that effect.
Yeah. I mean, in his interview with David Frost, he
right.
was clear on that. And in some of his earlier comments in 1973 and 74, he and his lackeys were very stunning in their declarations of power. That's been almost completely forgotten.
The electorate doesn't seem to have a really good memory for those kind of atrocities, but they do real well with who was the co-star of some ancient sitcom on TV, 20 years ago or something. That, I always found that to be rather phenomenal. You wrote in Chapter 6, the Founding Fathers had a vivid concept of governmental authorities going too far. And we heap an awful lot of honor on the Founding Dads, almost religious. Maybe it's even over the top in some instances as to their brilliance, although they seem to be, pretty astute dudes for their time, or our time for that matter. My question is, if the Founding Dads had this vivid concept of government going too far, how could we understand then why they didn't put more stringent measures into the Constitution in anticipation of that, in anticipation of Woodrow Wilson, no relation, FDR, LBJ, the Push family, the Sotero administration? How is it that they didn't build those things in there so that there'd be something a little bit less political than impeachment, for example, for some scoundrel who winds up in the Oval Office?
Good question. There was a split sentiment back.